Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you as usual in different locations. I'm in Boulevard Park, Washington, home of the Peltoncast.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
The 2020 NFL season is upon us with Kansas City, I presume, only off Houston. I don't think there was a miraculous comeback by the Texans.
Correct.
Since we turned that game off to start podcasting. Just as there probably will not be a miraculous comeback from San Jose for San Jose from down 7-0 to the Sounders. They've given up a touchdown in that one. So kudos to the Sounders. We are also almost, we are so close. By the time you listen to this, it may be past. To Peltoncast live from home, the first of what will hopefully not be an annual tradition, the fourth Peltoncast live show coming up Friday night, 9 p.m. on Zoom.
Hello! We are so close to this. You hear what that sound is.
Oh, you can literally taste it.
It's that the Rainier Tallboy. The sound of a Rainier Tallboy. You know what to expect from Peltoncast Live. We won't go through this too many times, but we have got special guests like Michael Sean Duggar and Natalie Weiner coming to you from midnight Eastern on the East Coast.
I mean, they're in a later segment. It's going to be 1 a.m. I don't know. Is Mike going to be in Atlanta on Friday? Or is he flying there on Saturday?
It might be an all Eastern time zone. Seahawks season preview.
He hasn't mentioned anything about it yet, so I'm just hoping it's fine.
He's probably, do you think he's actually flying to the game?
Yeah, he said he's going to be in Atlanta. He said he's not going to Magic City.
Oh.
It came up on Twitter.
Wow. Man. Well, I'm going to have to pour out this Rainier for him not going to Magic City. Michael Sean Duggar and Natalie Weiner for a Seahawks season preview. We have Talkin' Taco Time with, of course, our co-host Chris and Randy, plus special guest. You might know her from the Portland Trailblazers, Brooke Olsendam.
Assuming that Randy hasn't been canceled for his teriyaki takes before this.
Wow. The takes are coming in hot tonight. They're going to be even hotter. The takes might be like Choice Deli, too hot for you. We have got the decider to help us crown Seattle's best teriyaki before everybody complains about what we crown, Zach Whitman. And we have the original trader herself, Trader Mina Kimes, joining us on the podcast for a Rams season preview.
Are we sure Danny wasn't the original trader?
I think Danny might be the original trader.
She's just following in his Danny Kelly's footsteps there. But
Steve Hutchinson's the original trader.
I hope. I mean, we're so excited about this group of Third Peloton Brothers. Can't wait for the show. In the event you have not seen the link on Twitter or on Instagram, you can go to bit.ly/Peltoncast, or if that's too complicated to remember, it's also on the Peltoncast website, soniccentral.com/Peltoncast, which is actually a way longer website than the URL. And we will be on there starting at 9 p.m. PDT. So don't miss.
Ask a punk for the address of Peltoncast Live.
Okay, but that's all we're here to talk about.
But also, we have to mention one more thing.
What's that?
As always, heckling live and in the chat.
DJ, oh, yeah, we forgot about
Red. We could not be hosting Peltoncast Live at this point without him. We will see you there Friday, this Friday, 9 o'clock p.m.
Oh, it's going to be so great. I'm very excited. Okay, what we're here to talk about today, though, in a Peltoncast tradition that literally no one else but us cares about.
The people who beat us every year care about it, which is why we didn't invite anyone else.
I mean, this is the second consecutive year we didn't have anyone. We had Danny the first year, Trader Danny. We did this live during the live show and then realized it was not very compelling.
Everybody
live
hated this
material. Mm-hmm. Not Danny's fault at all. Strictly on our end.
I was the DJ Infrared of that year's live show, heckling as one of the hosts of the podcast.
Then we had Ben Baldwin on in 2018, but we did not have a guest with us in 2019 either. So the second consecutive year.
Because we're scared.
Okay, so this is how it works. In case, like Danny, before that show, you are unfamiliar with the over-under totals, the odds makers, in this case, I believe we're using betonline.com.
Ah, the fine people at betonline.com.
Yeah. They set a line for the season.
Wait, how did you settle on that?
It was very tricky finding like all of them in one spot with the actual odds on the over and under.
Okay.
That was the best source I found for that. Since Caesars Sportsbook did not post those this year.
Really?
For whatever reason. They just have playoff odds that I saw. Huh. I mean, I'm sure they exist in Las Vegas, but they weren't online. So, you know, if your win total is 7.5, if you win 7 games, that's an under. If you win 8 games, that's an over. If your win total is, you know, if your line is 8, if you win precisely 8, that's a push. And so we will pick whether teams are going to go over or under that line. Starting with, in the NFC West, the Arizona Cardinals in year 2 for Kyler Murray with a line of 7.5 wins.
Wow. Okay. So the Arizona Cardinals, again, you mentioned year 2 for Kyler Murray, former number 1 draft pick. Year 2 also for Cliff Kingsbury, sort of a trendy pick for making the playoffs this year. And I am going to go under 7.5 wins.
You're not feeling the hype. I am going over here. They have a very strong Football Outsiders projection of 8.3 wins on average in their playoff simulations.
We'll talk about this later, but the NFC West is such a difficult division that somebody is going to have to be the odd team out here. Not everybody can win 8 games.
I don't know about that mathematically. I suppose it's possible everyone
has that ever happened in a division. No team went under 500.
That's worth considering. The Atlanta Falcons, the Seahawks' first opponent, we previewed them on this week's pod, a line of 7.5 wins. We can already mark you down, Tristan, for the strong over. Are they a lock?
Again, another tough division and another one that's hard to handicap. Atlanta Falcons coming off a couple of disappointing seasons after being one of the best teams in the NFC. You know, many people are touting how powerful this offense is going to be with so many first-round draft picks. Clear over.
Yeah, we're agreed there. I mean, even last year, with all of the disappointment in the first half of the season, they won 7 games, had a 7.5 Pythagorean expectation in terms of their point differential. So, you know, I think the odds are they will be 500 or better this year. The Baltimore Ravens, last year's top regular season team, who lost in their opening game of the playoffs to the Tennessee Titans, after winning 14 games last season, have a line of 11.5.
I am going under for the Baltimore Ravens.
I'm also going under. I don't feel great about it, but Football Outsiders has them with an average of 9.5 wins.
So they also strongly feel under.
Yeah.
Question for you about, is there any history about quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, you know, sort of versatile quarterbacks? I don't want to call him a scrambling quarterback because he is a good passer, but as far as health beyond early in their career,
I haven't seen that. I mean, what you can probably say about Lamar Jackson is that it was the threat of him being such a dangerous runner that helped make him so effective as a passer last season, I think it's fair to say.
And I think a lot of people are looking at the Ravens as a pretty prime regression candidate. And
they also waived a really good safety.
Did they have Ed Reed? It feels like part of the reason that people were penciling them in as a regression team is partially because of Lamar Jackson, where it feels like he just can't reach those same heights for a second season.
Weirdly, I'm going to take an opposite position on Lamar Jackson later in this podcast, but I also think their defense might be ripe for some regression as well. San Jose has now scored a goal. It's 7-1. They're on
wow,
the board.
There's just really a lot happening in that match.
Wando with a PK. Buffalo Bills. A surprise playoff team last year. Now they're the co-favorites in the AFC East. Do we believe in Josh Allen? A line of 9 wins for the Buffalo Bills.
I am going over for the Buffalo Bills.
They did have like their Pythagorean numbers were right in line with their 10 wins last season. The Football Outsiders projections very low on them, relatively low on them. Have them as a 500 team. I'm going under here.
Really? What? So why do you think it is that is this also because of Josh Allen that the line is low, or that I think the defense is prime for regression.
Yeah, I think it's probably about the defense. And, you know, one of the things that will come out throughout this discussion is that defense tends to be much less predictable from year to year than offense is.
I'm staying over. No. Okay. They're gonna win the AFC East.
All right. Carolina Panthers. Something of a rebuild in the post Cam Newton era, a line of 5.5 wins.
Oh, clear over 5.5 wins for the Panthers.
Yeah, I'm taking a slide over here. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater's a pretty big upgrade at quarterback. Football Outsiders only has them with 6.2 wins on average, which is the second lowest projection for any team as I eyeball this.
Really?
But that's still better than 5.5.
This to me feels like a classic feel good 7-9 team. A team that has, you know, there are a lot of professional football players on the Carolina Panthers. Teddy Bridgewater is just, he's good for that many wins as a quarterback.
I mean, they did lose some quality professional football players as well.
I'm not saying that they didn't, but I'm just saying this isn't like a massive rebuild. This isn't they've dumped everybody or they're trying not to win or something like that. Like, this will be a scrappy Panthers team. The Panthers will beat multiple playoff teams this year.
Yo, it's on the record. The Chicago Bears.
Wow.
Last season's obvious regression candidate. This season now pegged to bounce back a little bit after winning 8 games, a line of 8.5 wins for the Bears.
Very tough team to understand the Bears. I'm going to go ahead and go under.
I also am going to go under here is, you know, despite the fact that their defense is so strong, I still have no faith in the offense of this team.
Who do you think across the NFL is the, similar to the Bears, is the worst returning starting quarterback for a playoff team? And why is it Aaron Rodgers?
The real hot take is it's Jimmy J.
I mean, he's in the mix. It's not even a hot take, right? To me, it's Josh Allen or it's Jimmy G or it is Rodgers, right?
I mean,
I don't know. Really feel like a regression candidate.
You could make a case. I mean, I'm excited to see what he's going to do this year, but you could make a case for Cam Newton.
Well, I'm not saying of a playoff team, of a quarterback, a similar situation to the Bears where they clearly were a lucky team 2 seasons ago to win the NFC North and be as close as they were to going to, I guess, the second round of the playoffs.
I don't think there's an analog this year to Chicago. Although,
you don't think Buffalo feels like the analog?
Nah, I don't think they feel like the analog.
Spry quarterback.
I mean, if there is an analog, I don't want to think about it.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later. The Cincinnati Bengals with a line of 5.5 wins.
Over. Drafting easy Joe Burrow. Over.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were a pretty good. Oh, I see that whatever you picked last year was your lock. Did you pick the over for the Bengals? I remember you were so excited about Zach Taylor after week one. For a team with the number one pick in the draft, they were actually pretty competitive. 4.3 Pythagorean wins. Not only add Joe Burrow, they presumably have AJ Green back healthy, knock on wood for my fantasy team. Last year I had AJ Green on like 3 fantasy teams. That did not work out super great. So I'm also an over.
You were really all in on AJ Green last year.
I mean, he was relatively late round for his talent, but yeah, that bet did not pay off.
I drafted him this year. I mean, I drafted him in like the 9th round or something, but I was like, all right, maybe it was earlier than that. It's like, I guess I'll take AJ Green on a flyer.
Staying in the state of Ohio, the Cleveland Browns with last year's hype team with a line of 8.5 wins.
Let me ask you a question before then. When was the last time that a rookie starting quarterback made the playoffs?
Are we counting Lamar Jackson? I mean,
I guess Lamar, I mean, he really was, right?
But he didn't start the majority of the season. By the way, you had an over on the Browns at 9 wins last year.
Oh, man.
You did make the Bengals under a lock, though.
Oh, great. Yeah. And then I was hyped on them after they played the Seahawks. They were spry against the Seahawks.
Correct.
I think the Bengals might make the playoffs.
Crazier things have happened. But let's talk about the Browns.
Okay. What was the over-under again?
8.5.
Okay. So... another tumultuous offseason for the Browns. You know, Baker Mayfield is, I think, possibly being underrated at this point, especially in fantasy, where he was somebody who last season I wanted to have in every league and was a disappointment once he started. But it just felt like the whole thing was a mess last year.
It was?
8.5 is it's not a low over-under at the same time.
No.
And... again, the AFC North is one of those divisions where I could see 3 or 4 teams winning it. I think I'm going under here again.
I also am going under. Dallas Cowboys, a line of 9.5 wins.
Over.
People have been hammering this over. I was somewhat surprised. The DVOA projections not that high on them. Average of 8.7 wins in the Football Outsiders playoff simulation. But this is a team that, while winning 8 games last year, had a Pythagorean differential of a team, the point differential of a team that would have won 11 games. So,
what is DVOA missing about the Cowboys?
I don't know. I mean, I can't poke inside the box necessarily to know what is resulting in that.
I mean, a trendy pick to win the NFC. This offense is going to be potent. This, you know, a second year of Kellen Moore as offensive coordinator. I don't really see the holes in this Dallas offense at the very least. They are going to score tons of points. This is such a clear over.
Denver Broncos, first full year for Drew Locke is the starter. Year 2 for him. A line, you know, he was pretty solid last year. A line of 7.5 wins after last year's 7.
This is an under.
Yeah, it's a slight under. It's not a big under, but it's an under.
It's a Broncos under, where the Broncos somehow will win 6 games. They'll be pretty bad all year, but they'll win 6 games, partially probably because of the elevation and because they're the Broncos. But
I mean, that is, you know, one of the interesting effects this year is what's going to happen to home field advantage without generally not fans in stadiums, although we did see fans at the Chiefs game tonight. Denver is one of the teams that should probably not lose very much because such a large element of that is about the altitude rather than their fan base specifically. Yeah,
Denver and dome teams. But also losing Von Miller, I think, for the season. It's just, this is not going to be a good season for the Broncos.
Detroit Lions with a line of 6.5 wins.
Man, that's such an easy over. 6.5? This is a lock.
I already had this filled in as a lock because the Lions over was my lock last year.
Wow.
When they had a line of 6.5 wins and won 3.
Well, tied Stafford's one. Healthy.
I know. They could definitely have gotten that, but it was not a good lock. But this is, again, my lock, Sam. We're in agreement there. This is a team
it's the right number.
The DVOA projections favor them to win the NFC North with 8.2 wins on average.
I'm not convinced the Lions are going to win the NFC North, but to get to 7 wins with a quarterback like Matt Stafford, with a team around Matt Stafford, it's just not that hard.
Staying in the NFC North, Green Bay, after winning 13 games last year, reaching the NFC Championship game, albeit with a point differential of a 10-win team, their line 9 wins.
You go first.
I went with an under here. I'm just going with the numbers. Football Outsiders projections, 7.8 wins on average.
I am going over.
I mean, I get it. 5 wins would be a lot to drop off from last season.
Not that it hasn't happened. And again, you know, Aaron Rodgers could be the Mitch Trubisky candidate, a team that clearly overachieved. I don't know if it was because of their defense. I think it was just because of luck last year. Honestly, it was one of those teams.
Well, I mean, their point differential was still a 10-win team. It's not like they were a bad team.
How the fuck did they get to 13 wins? But I mean, again, if they had the point differential of a 10-win team and they have average luck this year, they'll still exceed that projection.
All right, this one we locked in before tonight's season opener, as we did with Kansas City. The Houston Texans, a line of 7.5 wins, and we both went over.
No, they'll be fine.
I mean, the offense got going in garbage time. I'm not terribly concerned about this one. As it turned out, I don't know if you heard this, they lost to the Chiefs in Kansas City in last year's playoffs as well.
Yeah, the Chiefs are too, like I said to you, I think there is a chance that the Chiefs go undefeated this season.
Did you say that? I guess I didn't process that when you said it earlier. The Indianapolis Colts, having added Philip Rivers to the core of the team that was a playoff team, I believe, 2 years ago with Andrew Luck as quarterback before regressing last year with Jacoby Brissett and some injuries at the quarterback position, a line of 9 wins.
Man, 9 wins. I am going to go over.
Same here. I don't feel great about it. 10 wins is a lot, but I love the Phil Rivers late career move to a better team, or a healthier team, at least, knock on wood.
There is going to be an aged quarterback this year who looks amazing. And, you know, we don't know who it is, or an aged quarterback who moves to a new team and I think has a chance to compete for the MVP. Whether it's Phil Rivers, whether it's Brady, whether it's Cam Newton, somebody like that, one of those three players is going to have a monster season. And I'm just going over for all of them.
Just in case.
Yeah, I'm going over on all old man quarterbacks.
You just call Cam Newton old. He's 31.
Even Rodgers. Not old, but an experienced quarterback.
Fine.
Cam Newton has had a lot long of
time starting quarterback. Starting career. Jacksonville Jaguars, the lowest line on the board at 4.5 wins. You know how you know that they're not trying to win this season. They released Leonard Fournette.
Oh man, 4.5. I feel like I've gone over a lot. I'm going to go over for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
You have gone over a lot. You've already gone over 11 times. And we're halfway through with the team that we've already done. I also am going over here. I mean, 4.5 is just a really, really low line to hit. And they do have a competent quarterback in Gardner Minshew. Minshew magic. I mean, I think he's like he's like a young Ryan Fitzpatrick that he's just going to pull some games out. No comment on that?
I just can't compare him to Fitzmagic. Like,
you know,
Fitzmagic is a unique personality. There's only one Fitzmagic.
There's only one Gardner Minshew. And you know what they say? Wazoo is the Harvard of the West.
That is true. The Harvard of the Palouse, I think, is what they say.
Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs. We like this one again. In previous to the game, a line of 11.5 wins.
You mentioned that I went over.
I did. I also went over here. Football Outsiders, typically conservative projections, have them only at 10.2 wins, even though that's tied for the best in among all teams. I am also, like I said, feel confident that they're, you know, along with, as long as Mahomes stays healthy. Mahomes didn't stay healthy last year, and they still won 12 fucking games.
They're the perfect team. They bring everybody back. This does not happen with a Super Bowl team. Like, they bring everybody back plus coordinators. That is impossible. And wasn't even a team where they didn't win one ahead of schedule. They didn't accidentally win that Super Bowl. They won that Super Bowl on schedule. The previous year might have been a year earlier than they should have, but this team easily, without an offsides penalty against the Patriots, could be looking to three-peat.
Oh, to have a superstar quarterback on a rookie contract and let that quarterback cook.
It's just, it's a different situation. They have built the team around Mahomes more than the Seahawks ever built around Russ. Mahomes is a better quarterback. Like, yes. I think we can probably agree on that. But if they had built the Seahawks around Russ in the same way that they built around Mahomes, the Seahawks possibly could have done something similar.
Well, I mean, they did go back to the Super Bowl the next year. They had a few defections. Golden Tate, Gus Bradley was after the Super Bowl win, right?
They were decimated a lot more than the Chiefs have been. I mean, the Chiefs are bringing basically everybody back.
And then they added Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is going to be quite effective in that system, it seems, even if running backs don't matter. Las Vegas Raiders, first year in Vegas. No fans, at least for now, in line of 7.5 wins.
I'm going under only because I've gone over too many times. I want to go over so bad, but I'm going under.
I mean, the good news is the unders are a little bit backloaded, I would say, alphabetically. I also went under here. They, their Football Outsiders average projection is precisely 7.5 wins. So this is one of the more accurate lines on the board. Los Angeles Chargers, also in the AFC West, also with a line of 7.5 wins. As much as we fell in love with them on Hard Knocks, a tough finish to training camp as they lose Derwin James to what will surely be season-ending surgery to repair a torn meniscus.
Yeah, that's a win too high. You know, I love Tyrod Taylor, but to get to 8 wins, I don't think it's a particularly difficult AFC West aside from the Chiefs, but I just don't think they could get there.
I mean, I did go over here. I mean, even without Derwin James, there's a lot of talent there. Now, unfortunately, those guys are almost certainly going to be injured, but we'll see. And they don't have the home field disadvantage that they've had the last 3 years.
Home field disadvantage? Yeah. Other teams' fans can't show up if there's no fans at all.
Exactly. Staying at SoFi Stadium. The brand new, gorgeous stadium in Inglewood. The Los Angeles Rams with a line of 9 wins, same as they won last year.
I'm going over for the Rams.
You know, I kind of expected I was going to go over, but then statistically, like last year they won 9. They had the point differential of basically a 9-win team. I don't think they're quite as talented as they were last year. I mean, the Dante Fowler loss might be in a factor. And Football Outsiders projects them for 8.6 wins on average. So I took the under here.
Interesting. Yeah, it's another full season of Jalen Ramsey. I mean, it's all about Goff. If Goff is an above average quarterback to a good quarterback, they could win the NFC. And if Goff is Goff of last year, then they'll be around 9 wins. The infrastructure is there, but I'm just not convinced that the quarterback is there, but it's just like the talent is too great. You know, they're playing a third place schedule. I think this is a team that gets to 10 wins.
The Miami Dolphins, last year's, you know, favorite to get the number one pick, but a surprisingly strong 5-win team this year with a line of 6.5 wins with Tua Tagovailoa.
They won 5 games?
They sure did. Like, Tua Tagovailoa potentially stepping in at some point for Fitzmagic.
How did they win 5 games? That's the thing about the Jags, right? Like, right. You look back on the Dolphins team and you're like, there's no way they won 5 games last year.
No,
they eke it out.
They were terrible at the start of the season, but they were a credible team by the end of the year. Brian Flores got them playing some good football.
I mean,
even though they still had a
3.6 point differential. I am going under here.
I am going over. I mean, you know, I think that same thing. There's more talent this year for them to... I went under. Never mind. Pay no attention to that.
Keep explaining why you went over, though.
I've read a book about how, like, what we think of as our reasoning to arrive at a decision. The book is called The Enigma of Reason, is actually just to support and justify a decision that we came to for reasons we can't actually investigate or articulate. This is a good example of that.
I could give an argument for why every team could be over and under, right? Like the margins, that's the point of over-unders, is it should be right in the middle.
I probably went back and changed this so I had an even number of overs and unders.
Does that actually matter?
No, but it's generally a good practice, I think.
Ugh, overrated.
So you're taking the over on overs.
Overrated. Unrated, I am going over.
Minnesota Vikings with a line of 9 wins after winning 10 last season, but losing Stephon Diggs and all of their quarterbacks.
I'm going under.
The Vikings are basically taking the opposite side. Like, we don't really think the Seahawks are like reading the analytics and that pass rush is overrated relative to coverage. But the Vikings are like going the exact opposite direction in that one. So I also am taking the under for the record here. 7.7 wins on average.
They're taking the exact opposite perspective of statistics. Yeah, I think that's an under. I mean, now
in fairness to them, I think a lot of what they're assuming is that Mike Zimmer, you know, came up as a secondary coach, is going to be able to coach up some of their young talent in the secondary, and therefore where they actually need to pay is someplace that's more difficult for them to develop talent in terms of the defensive line.
It's a perspective. We've definitely been there before.
New England Patriots with a line of 9 wins.
Oh, that's, I got to go over.
Yeah, their statistical projections are just so bad. 8.1 wins on average from Football Outsiders, despite the fact that they won 12 last season with the point differential of a 13-win team. So I went under.
You just... Until I have a reason to, I'm not going to bet against Belichick.
Fair. I'm not putting any actual money on that for sure. New Orleans Saints with a line of 10.5 wins.
Man, 10.5. I'm going to go over for the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, they are tied with Kansas City for the highest average win total in the Football Outsiders projections at 10.2. Won 13 games last season with Drew Brees missing an extended period, had the point differential of an 11-win team. I do think this is an over. The New York Giants with a line of 6.5 wins in year 2 for Danny Dimes.
I'm going over on the Giants. Let's go. This is going to be the offense this year. Load up on Giants in fantasy.
Did you draft Sterling Shepard?
No, I hate these receivers. Well, I hate these receivers in fantasy.
I'm not the world's biggest Golden Tate fan in general right now. Used to be a big fan. Yeah, solid Football Outsiders projection of 7.3 wins here. So I also am in over after they won 4 games last season. New York Jets. I'm pretty sure I've told the story about the podcast about watching Daniel Jones's first start with Mina, who had like, you know, her reaction to the Giants taking Daniel Jones had become like a legitimate talking point because she was so flabbergasted and horrified by them taking Daniel Jones.
And then he was great in that first start.
And there were a bunch of Giants fans at the bar in LA that we were at in like Echo Park or Silver Lake or wherever it was. And
at the Chargers game.
Yeah. There was more people there than the Chargers game. And the Seahawks were losing to the Saints. It was a rough experience.
The Seahawks were losing to the Saints?
Yeah, that's a thing that happened. They lost at home to the Saints.
Oh, yeah. The game that Teddy started that we went into and thought we would win easily.
I don't know. I recall. Easily. But
I recall that.
Yeah, it was.
Was Danny Dimes actually good at the end of last season? Because I feel like a lot of people have said that. But then I just...
I think he was good in fantasy. I don't think he was good in real football.
Okay.
He was better, probably. New York Jets, year 3 of Sam Darnold, in line of 7 wins.
7 wins?
They actually won 7 last year. Shock. I had no idea.
I'm going under here.
Is am I? Philadelphia Eagles, a line of 9.5 wins. Always a trendy pick for reasons that remain somewhat unclear to me.
Wow, you hate the Eagles.
I just like every single year, like, oh, look out for the Eagles because they won that. I mean, they won the Super Bowl not that long ago.
Because they won that Super Bowl.
Over the Patriots. But Nick Foles is not walking through that door, friends.
Wow, that first game was a monster Danny Dimes fantasy game. 34.28 fantasy points. I am going under for the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really good shot they win 9 games. I mean, obviously, there's a good shot they win 10 games, but I don't think that's the most likely scenario.
some Daniel Jones fantasy points throughout the year? I keep hearing people be like, oh, watch out for Daniel Jones. He was good at the end of last year. And I'm just like, I just fucking blindly go along with it. I'm drafting him in fantasy leagues right now. Okay, here's Daniel Jones week 10, not as my starter, but like,
well, yeah.
Let's do week 10 on, because I do want to include some good games. So 28, 11, 27, 9, 5, 10, 12, 34.
Not great, Bob.
He had 3 good games out of 8. And I'm over here. What is that week? Oh, I'm looking at it the other way around.
You're looking at the start of his season?
Yes. Okay, I take it back. No, it still is not that great, but it is better. He had a 34 against Tampa Bay. So, but I mean, looking at it from the other direction, he had a 34 against Washington in week 16. And then like a 7 against Green Bay, was injured for against Philadelphia and Miami. Like, these are still not good numbers, no matter which direction you're looking at it.
Yes, I agree with that. There are like some monster performances at times, but some really awful ones in between that were probably going
to
get you.
I mean, for a non-running quarterback, I will say that getting to a 34 twice is kind of impressive. He did have 2 rushing touchdowns in that game against Tampa Bay,
though. Yeah, I was going to say, is Daniel Jones a non-rushing quarterback?
He had 2 rushing touchdowns all year.
But he averaged, I guess, about 20 yards per start. He's not a rushing quarterback, but he's not a statue.
You just repeated what I said.
Look, I told you again, you don't actually reason things. You just come up with them after the fact. Pittsburgh Steelers stand in the state of Pennsylvania, also a line of 9.5 wins.
Easy over.
Easy over. Wow.
If Roethlisberger's healthy, I mean, how many did they win last year? 8, 9?
They won 8, but they were extremely fortunate on defense in terms of turnovers, particularly after Minka Fitzpatrick's arrival.
Still, they did that with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. Like,
I went under on this one. San Francisco 49ers, a line of 10.5 wins.
That's an under, boss.
I don't want to say it out loud because, you know, it's relevant to the Seahawks, but a lot of statistical indicators, not great for the 49ers. They win an average of 8.4 games in the DVOA projections, which is not the most in the NFC West. The most in the NFC West.
There were two coordinators who last year I was like, that person is definitely going to get a job this offseason. And neither of those coordinators ended up getting jobs. They do have one thing in common, shockingly. But Robert Saleh coming back to this 49ers team after what that defense did, not getting a head coaching job, is shocking. So if there is one thing that I will give them as the Super Bowl losers, it seems like they are maintaining some continuity here. You know, the defense has definitely been shaken up. To me, it's about Garoppolo. And I'm not so convinced of Kyle Shanahan's ability as a coordinator. I mean, we said the same thing about McVay the previous year, right? We said that he was a genius offensive coordinator, could be stopped. And while the Rams were good last year, they were not anywhere near as good as they were the previous season. I think we see a similar thing from the 49ers.
That seems likely, but the 49ers will probably go 16-0 for Jig's purposes. Anyways, like I said, the best projection in the NFC West in the Football Outsiders playoff projections, DVOA projections, with 8.9 wins, the Seattle Seahawks, whose line is 9 wins.
Over.
I also am going in over here. I think actually, like, if I'm looking at the most likely scenario, it's a push, but the upside is more likely than the downside here, I think. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Tampa Bay, a line of 9.5 wins.
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to go over.
You're 18th over so far out of 30 teams. I went under the statistical projections, a little more bearish on the Buccaneers, appropriately bearish after last season. 8.7 wins on average in the Football Outsiders projections. Are we sure they upgraded at a quarterback?
Oh, God.
Are we sure?
You're not going to be saying that when Brady wins the MVP.
Wow. I didn't say, are we sure if the Colts upgraded a quarterback? Tennessee Titans, although, you know, Jacoby Brissett, you'd rather have him than Russell Wilson. Tennessee Titans, a line of 8.5 wins after they snuck into the playoffs last year with 9 and then made their way all the way to the AFC Championship game. A full year now of Ryan Tannehill.
You had 18 overs. You want 19 overs? Because you got it.
Yeah. Let's go.
Full year of Tana Thrill. Come on.
I mean, I'm over here as well, obviously, even though their Football Outsiders projection is for 8.3 wins. I'm a Tannehill believer. Washington football team. That's not an adjustment to say that anymore. That's just their name.
I mean, we were saying it all along.
Well, we were saying Washington professional football team because that had at some point to be contrasted from the amateur football team at the University of Washington. But, you know, now that they're not playing football in their fall.
Both went away this year.
It's not as confusing anymore. Washington football team with a line of 5.5 wins after winning 3 last season.
God, that feels like an over 2.
You're very optimistic. I give you that. It was, I basically patted you on the head.
You're very optimistic. I'm going over.
I also went over here. Yeah. You know you had to do it. We're very excited to see what JD McKissick has in store as a starting running back.
So do we have to pick a certain amount of locks?
I think one is sufficient.
Okay.
Now, I mean, again, for jinx purposes, the one I feel probably second most strongly about is in the NFC West and in the Seahawks' favor, so I can't do it.
And that's the Niners?
I'm not even willing to acknowledge that.
Wow. I definitely do not feel that confident about the Niners' regression. I feel like a Broncos under is the only one that I would consider for a lock.
Interesting. With that in the book, should we talk a little bit about fantasy football, having now each concluded 3 drafts, including 2 against each other over the past 2 weeks here?
I like the idea that you draft against each other.
Oh, head-to-head
that's
drafting.
That's a redraft.
It's a two-man league.
If you went by just projections after the draft, I think I won both. So they finally let me into the Pelton Cast Champions League. The first year we've done the
it's unclear who they are in this scenario. They is me, right?
The they is you.
Because I'm managing the leagues. You finally earned your way into the Pelton Cast Champions League.
We've done this league for 3 years. You put yourself in the de facto Champions League in the first year. You just made the league that you were in the Champions League, basically.
Huh.
I don't know. You've deleted all history of these leagues, so nobody can find out.
That is not true. But I don't know that the names, the old names still show up.
The second year, I think I had good teams, but for some reason, because of your calculations, I didn't make it into the Champions League. I remember there was bickering about it.
Sure, you had good teams.
And this year, the Pelton brothers will finally compete against each other in a Pelton Cast Fantasy League.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. This says nothing about Champions League in the League One here.
I'm just saying, was it League One?
No, I was in League Two, as it turned out.
Everybody knows League Two is the de facto Champions League. Oh my God.
You were in there with Baby Fantasy Genius. I can't remember how that went.
He was a participant?
According to this, yes. I assume Mrs. Fantasy Genius was managing that team.
That's very interesting. Okay, so these are 12-team leagues that we have. So for the Pelton Cast Champions League, every owner has earned their way to the Champions League, right?
You had to either play in the final or have the most points in your league of the teams that didn't advance to the final.
Okay, which I think I might have been part of. So we should mention everybody who has achieved this honor.
Okay. I mean, there was at least one person who was in the Champions League, but then did not return for this season.
Wait, really? Yeah. Is that how I got in? I'm the 12th person.
I don't think that's how you got in.
They chose not to return.
Correct. The Champions League this year is Austin, Chad, Chris Wheeler, Glenn Christie, James Darnbrook, Jimmer, the famous, who, you know, fantasy genius Jimmer, as he's proclaimed himself, the famous Cousin Katie, me, our Cousin Kyle, Lukey Crowley, Mark Stewart, and you.
And also with Chad's team, Ben Drozdoff manages that team as well.
There you
interesting
go.
To know, I Glenn Christie, British.
Correct.
James Darnbrook also lives in the United States, as far as we know. Also British. I wonder if there's something to cold hard facts in fantasy.
You know what I think it is? You know, time zones earlier on the waivers.
That's actually a really good point. I like that. We drafted, I'm trying to think of what the time zone would have been in England when we drafted. I feel like it's like 4 a.m.
Yes, I think that sounds right. It was 3 or 4 a.m.
Wow, look at Glenn Christie competing.
Oh, Glenn Christie, all the respect for that guy.
So I just want to go through the draft quickly and kind of what you were thinking, what I was thinking, strategies that you had for this draft of, you know, it looked very different than I think the other drafts that we did, and which should be the case with everybody in the Champions League. It should be a fairly competitive draft.
I know. Yeah. I didn't come out of that one feeling quite as good about my team, I think, as the first draft I had in the PeltonCast Economist Friends League, which Zach, Ben, and I are in together for the third, for the second consecutive
year. I'm going to call that the de facto Champions League later on. don't worry. So going into this draft, I just want to set the stage here. I was hanging out distanced at a music friend's house on a rooftop patio, enjoying some Johnny Utahs, just having a great time being around other human beings for the first time in 6 months. And the time was getting closer and closer to the draft. And at some point, it was just like, I'm not getting home for this. I'm just going to have to draft while I'm driving. And I don't recommend this to anybody, but that is how I conducted 85% of this draft.
Yes, I can verify this, as we were on the phone as well.
Yes. Meanwhile.
Do not try this at home.
Leading into this, I'm going to be arrested after this podcast. Meanwhile, leading into this draft, how did you prepare for the draft?
Well, I built my own fantasy football projections this year.
Fucker.
I did projections for quarterbacks, for veteran. All of these except for running backs were just strictly NFL veterans based on their previous three seasons performance. I also built a rookie running back projection for rushing, and then receiving projection that broke down differently by position. So, yeah. Now, the funny thing is I did all this work, which was very useful because I'm learning R. That's been kind of my quarantine project.
Wow, you used Ben Baldwin's website against him.
I did. It's true.
Cold.
I mean, I did not use the NFL Fast R data at all. I was scraping off Pro Football Reference, as it turns out, because that was more useful for the box score stats I needed here. Yeah, so I went through all this work, and you get sometimes very different like touchdown percentage projections than the ESPN default projections, but I was still using those for the, you know, yard rushing attempts, pass attempts, targets, etc. And when you apply that, the projections were almost exactly the same.
But there were work for ESPN.
There were a few takeaways here. I mean, I don't generate the projections. I think that's mostly a coincidence. Or not a coincidence, but just because, you know, there's only so much you can probably do to optimize those projections, I guess is what I would say. But I did come away with a few takeaways, because the other thing I did was to establish like a replacement level at each position. I went through and looked at who was the most added player at each position each week of last season, and then what they actually scored.
Okay.
And so one of my takeaways was replacement level is lower than I expected at quarterback, where, you know, usually the logic is, oh, you can just find a decent quarterback out there. Not true, surprisingly. Maybe because too many people were starting Daniel Jones in his bad weeks. But tight end, defense, and kicker, like all of the defenses, if you go week to week, are better than the best projection for any defense going into the season. Or same with kicker. And at tight end, there was only a handful of players with a better projection going into the season, and they were still being drafted too high relative to that. So I did not draft a tight end, defense, or kicker before maybe at the very earliest round 13 in any of these drafts.
Really, it's fascinating because my strategy was entirely about drafting a tight end high.
Wow. It's good to test these different strategies.
I mean, there's so much more to a fantasy season. It's not like if one of us ends up being good and the other doesn't, it's probably not going to be because of our strategy with regards to tight ends.
It's probably going to be because of who gets hurt.
Who gets hurt, or which first round running back ends up being good or isn't good, or whatever.
If you draft Todd Gurley the bad year.
Yeah. Like, I question how much a draft strategy actually matters. And I think luck matters a lot. And I think the only way that you can basically make your own luck in fantasy is by taking as many boom or bust players as you can.
That was another thing that I concluded to some extent, is that, you know, again, even though that replacement level is relatively lower at running back and wide receiver than those other positions I mentioned, still, after you get through like the first six or seven rounds, everyone is below replacement level. So at that point, what matters the most is just getting someone who has a chance to break out.
Yes.
Which still didn't lead to me drafting very many rookie running backs because they just went higher than I had them projected anyway. So I don't know.
The rookie running backs are a little bit, obviously, aside from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who, like, for all intents and purposes, this is the highest I have ever seen a rookie running back go.
Did Saquon go this high?
Pick six. I think Saquon was probably a first round pick, but closer to the end of the first round.
Hold on, I'm
this is very high.
Yeah, Saquon was the 12th pick in 2018 in this league,
and with good reason. Like I don't question that. You know, it's a little bit of a tough pill for me to swallow of a running back who has never played a game being drafted basically right after, say, the big four or five. That's a little bit tough, but I completely understand it. And I think he'll probably live up to it. It was more just like,
it was a good start tonight.
There's one too many unknowns to me with a running back like Clyde Edwards-Helaire to use my first pick was the fifth pick, to use a pick like that on him.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a 19.8 tonight and did not have a catch, which is wild.
Well, I actually took away from that as a negative, because if he's not going to be involved in the passing game...
I think he's going to be involved in the passing game.
We'll see, but zero catches in week one is like, okay, he had a good game, he scored a touchdown, there's going to be running lanes open for him. We know that for a fact, but being involved, especially in a PPR league, so this league is 12 teams, PPR, I don't know, it was a good game. It's if we're looking at KPIs, it wasn't perfect for me.
All right, let's get into this draft. You had the sixth pick?
Fifth pick,
which is a place you wanted to be, right?
I mean, I love being right in the middle of a draft because it feels like you're drafting pretty often. You don't have to reach for players as much necessarily because you're not going to be picking for another 45 minutes. Similar to where you ended with the 12th pick.
Yeah, exactly the last pick I would have wanted.
I don't love the 12th pick. There were two running backs that I wanted in that territory, and one of them was gone by the time you picked. So, you know, we explored the idea of just flipping the first couple of picks. which, you know, if so, the two running backs that I wanted in that territory were I wanted Josh Jacobs and I wanted Nick Chubb. I think there's a relatively good chance that Nick Chubb enters into that class of the big five, six next season. And, you know, there's a little bit of concern, I suppose, because of Kareem Hunt, but it's like, this is Nick Chubb's job. So if he would have been there plus Josh Jacobs and you could have taken both of those with your picks 12 and 13, I might have made that trade. So I basically,
the guys I wanted were Austin Eckler and Aaron Jones. They were the two I was looking at.
Aaron Jones? Like, why do you want Aaron Jones? Justify this to me.
He came out really well in my projections.
Yeah, but we're talking about a Green Bay team that the consensus is that they're going to be worse.
I mean, where did Aaron Jones finish among running backs last season? Not that this is necessarily how you should go, but I think he finished quite well.
It does feel like there are some scenarios where people just sort of anoint players. And like Derrick Henry, for whatever reason, has just never been part of that like first class of fantasy running backs, which I don't quite understand.
PPR is very different for Derrick Henry than non-PPR.
But even we did a non-PPR draft, and did Derrick Henry go much higher?
He went a bit higher. I was definitely hoping he was going to fall for me. Aaron Jones, by the way, finished last year number two in total fantasy points among running backs. On a per game basis, he drops behind Delvin Cook.
That's pretty wild. He went pick eight. Henry went two picks higher in the non-PPR draft. And it's basically because I feel like we were playing with maybe slightly less experienced players in the non-PPR league who just took Allaire later.
I took Keenan Allen really high last year. Worked out, but it's amazing how much lower he's going this year.
Did it work out? I don't get that. Keenan Allen is another one where it's just like, why do people not like Keenan Allen now?
He was pretty low in my projections, which presumably had to do with his targets. So like when I drafted him in the friends and family league we have, it was like he was nowhere near the top of my projections, but I just saw him looking on the board and I was like, oh, Keenan Allen. I always like having Keenan Allen.
Yep.
There you go. I mean, I think people are skeptical about the drop-off from Phillip Rivers to Tyrod Taylor or Tyrod Taylor.
So I went with Dalvin Cook here as basically the best available running back. I was just like, I'm not going to overthink this. I'm not going to take what is a little bit more of a risk in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm taking Cook. If you're in the first five picks, basically whomever of those five players falls to me, I'm going to take them.
And round two, a bit more interesting of a pick perhaps for you. You go with Travis Kelce.
Well, so you did Kenyon Drake and then Aaron Jones.
Correct, because Eckler was not out there.
I know Kenyon Drake was excellent in his time with the Cardinals last season, but I need a little bit more from Kenyon Drake. This idea that the Cardinals are going to be, you know, maybe halfway through last year, they pivoted and started running quite a bit more. Granted, Kenyon Drake can be involved in the passing game. I still think Cliff Kingsbury wants to pass the ball a lot. And they're adding DeAndre Hopkins. Like, the team is going to pass.
Yeah, but if they score touchdowns, that's going to be good for Kenyon Drake.
All right. So my strategy was I'm going running back. And then if there isn't a second running back that I like with the second pick, I'm going to draft a tight end. And there are so many, wide receivers available in the mid rounds. Whereas like if I can get Travis Kelce, I'm just going to take Travis Kelce. And so that's what I did in round two.
Yep.
I came back again before you picked again and scooped up Mike Evans in round three, who I feel great about. And then he promptly got injured. Literally the next day. We'll see.
So I'm picking at the end of round three, top of round four, and living up to the fact that my team is named Trader Mina in this league, drafted back-to-back Rams receivers.
You'll love to see it.
Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp were both at the top of my projection. So what are you going to do?
Looking at these receivers in this territory, though, it's just like, I love all of these receivers.
Do you? Like, I do not love Odell Beckham. I think Tyler Lockett tends to go too early in all of our drafts because we are Seahawks homers. Although weirdly, that does not apply to Russell Wilson. DK Metcalf went like several rounds too early in every draft I saw.
DK went kind of high. I mean, DK went high. He went in the fourth round. But it was basically like, again, injuries have plagued some of these players, but like Mike Evans, Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm not convinced on DJ Moore, partially just because of that Panthers projection. Amari Cooper I like, Woods I like, Cooper Kupp I like, Calvin Ridley I like, AJ Brown I like. Like, I would be excited about almost any of these receivers, which is why I was like, I'm just going to wait a second on receivers. There's a lot of good receivers out there. I feel like I reached here for a rookie running back in round four, and I saw you drafting Rams, and I got excited. It's basically just like, this is my last chance to take a running back for an extraordinarily long time, who I feel like could be a starting running back and have the potential of getting into that first pick territory. So I chose Rams rookie running back Cam Akers in round four.
And you came back again ahead of me in round five and went to the wide receiver spot.
Longer term, well, I'll come back to that actually. I went with Michael Gallup, who I fucking love Michael Gallup.
I don't have strong feelings on Michael Gallup. In two of the three leagues I was in, I took Lamar Jackson because even once you factor in regression to the mean, his projection, he was so far ahead of everyone else at quarterback last year that he's still projected is like a top five player by my model. So I took him in the second round in one draft, and I think I scooped him up in the middle of the third round in our non-PPR draft. So I was excited about that. This one, he was long off the board by this point. He had gone at the end of the second round. Mahomes went in the middle of the second round. So I was excited that I was able to wait a while before starting a run on quarterbacks by taking Deshaun Watson.
And then you followed it up with another pick.
Followed it up with Julian Edelman, just a reliable PPR target. I have him in both of my PPR leagues.
Do you? I do not like that pick at all.
Okay.
It's not at all what I'm looking for, I guess. Is
you're all about upside, but I feel like you need a base of guys that you can feel comfortable starting, and then you look for upside. So to me, round six is too early to do that. I think I probably did that not really. My round seven, round eight picks are pretty boring, but by round nine.
Oh, that's when things get wild. Yeah, that run of quarterbacks happened where you went Watson, then Dak goes, Kyler goes, and Russell Wilson all go in round six, which I definitely considered Russ here. And it was basically like, if I'm going to take a quarterback, this is where I'm going to take a quarterback. And if I don't take a quarterback here, I'm waiting a long time to take a quarterback.
And you didn't take a quarterback.
I went with Stephon Diggs, who I feel like kind of falls into both of those categories. I mean, Stephon Diggs was a third, maybe fourth round receiver the previous season. Like, he was being talked about as somebody who could have entered into that top-tier receiver range, and he didn't have a great season his last year in Minnesota. I understand that he's moving to Josh Allen as his quarterback, but, like, they're going to get the ball downfield. Stephon Diggs is both a breakout candidate and a reliable receiver.
Okay.
I mean, I think the same thing, if you could take injuries out of the mix, which I don't know if you can, but, like, Will Fuller feels like the same thing to me.
Yeah, you can't take injuries out of the mix. This was your AJ Green pick in round seven. I had relatively boring back-to-back picks of Tariq Cohen and Sterling Shepard at the end of that round and the top of the next. And then you went back to the Rams running backs.
So it was basically insurance if Cam Akers ends up not being the starter or not getting a majority of the carries for the Rams. And I selected for the second season in a row, did not play him one time, kept him on my roster for a lot of weeks last year, but give me some Daryl Henderson.
I like that you got Ronald Jones in the next round. That was probably pretty good value there.
But before we move past that, I went and looked at the Rams depth chart the next day, and who knows how much to trust this, but number one on the Rams depth chart, do you think it's Henderson or Cam Akers?
Based on what you're saying, it's Malcolm Brown.
It's Malcolm Brown! I took two Rams running backs in the first eight rounds, and neither of them are listed as the number one running back on the Rams depth chart. Kill me.
You know, I took AJ Dillon in the 12th round here as a handcuff for Aaron Jones, and I got to tell you, I had completely forgotten until today that Jamal Williams still was on the Packers. I mean, I assume they view him in a slightly different role than either of those two players, and that if Aaron Jones were to go down, that Dillon would probably get a lot of carries, but I had a similar experience.
It's just this is my least favorite part of any draft. I think getting AJ Green around 7 is kind of a steal, though.
I agree. I 100% agree.
But this is my least favorite part of any draft, where like I love taking purely speculative players and I love taking good players, but I'm like I was kind of stoked on Zach Moss here, you know, but I'm like, do I need a splitting carries Bills running back
on my team here, round 8?
Okay, round 9. So yeah, you mentioned I picked up Ronald Jones here, who if Bruce Arians is to be trusted, could be the Buccaneers starting quarterback or starting running back in what could be a very explosive offense.
And then you doubled down on your Tampa Bay offense.
It's my Tampa Bay offense.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
Round 10. I guess I didn't wait that long for a quarterback.
No.
But so you in between there picked up a couple of running backs.
I mean, I don't feel like we need to go through every pick individually in round 9 and round 10. Let's just talk about the picks we're excited about. Even though he didn't do much of anything today, I'm excited about Mecole Hardman.
You're excited about getting Mecole Hardman?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I love the ends of these drafts. So basically, my strategy, and I assume your strategy, I'm comfortable with the idea of taking 2 quarterbacks, but I just want to fill up my bench as fast as possible with speculative players, with somebody who has a chance of breaking out. And there were a few players that I was sort of targeting in this range. I picked up Joe Burrow in another league. I guess that was for Natalie's team, which is just like, screw it. Maybe Joe Burrow will be good. Who knows? This league, I went with Daniel Jones, as previously discussed. Van Jefferson has gotten quite a bit of hype. You know, I didn't draft Tony Pollard, but I do like those running backs who are just like, they're one injury away from a very good starting job.
Correct.
And the same with handcuffing Dalvin Cook with Alexander Mattison.
I at the quarterback position in this league, I don't think I drafted a backup quarterback, and I might not have drafted one in either of my other leagues, but in this league, I decided to continue my Rams offense parlay. And also, they have a really favorable matchup the week that Deshaun Watson has a bye. So I grabbed Jared Goff in the 13th round before.
Jared Goff, you're really going to, what week is their bye?
Like week 8.
You're really going to keep Jared Goff on your roster that long? Like, just go sign Jared Goff later on.
I don't know if I can be confident that Jared Goff is going to be out there.
I feel like, in hindsight, I screwed up the strategy completely, though. Like, if I could redo this draft, I don't know. I like so many of the, like, round... Who did you pick up at tight end?
Dallas Goedert in round 16. That's my final pick.
Wow! Your starting tight end you drafted in round 16?
I mean, we could look at the other drafts, but I didn't
draft one before round 14. Why did you bother drafting a kicker and a defense before a tight end?
Because I think basically my strategy was I'm just taking whoever has good matchups in week 1, and there were more notably good matchups there than there were at tight end.
This is a freaking strategy that you employed here.
It is a strategy.
Because I like a lot of the pretty deep tight ends. I don't know if Dallas Goedert is on that list, but like, I'm pretty fascinated to see how that one works out for
in
you.
In the first league I did, I drafted Jack Doyle in round 15.
Wow.
And in our friends and family league, which is 10 players, I drafted Jack Doyle in round 16.
Wow. You're just all in on Jack Doyle.
Yeah.
Do they have another tight end in Indianapolis?
No, Eric Ebron is not there anymore.
I saw that. I mean, I like Austin Hooper. I like Hunter Henry. Oh, well,
Austin Hooper, I've done some research on this. Pretty substantial regression to the mean candidate.
But then I also like Hayden Hurst as somebody replacing Austin Hooper. Like, they're in the end. The thing is, one of these tight ends is going to be excellent this year. One of Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson, Hunter Henry, Hayden Hurst, people like that in that territory, they're going, Chris Herndon, like they're going to be an excellent tight end this year. But I just can't take that many picks to figure out which one. And 4 of them will probably be, you know, just an average tight end or whatever.
Yeah.
So are you gonna float this week to week with tight ends?
That's
your plan?
Yeah.
It's a strategy. I will give you that.
We'll see.
I mean, I've definitely...
I did it in a number of leagues last year because I think I drafted in at least two leagues, I drafted David Njoku and he got injured in like week three. So that was basically what I was stuck doing anyway. May as well not waste a draft pick.
Did you ever find... I mean, you could have found Austin Hooper on the waiver wire last year who was like a top five tight end, if not higher.
I might have ended up with Austin Hooper in one of my leagues.
That is the thing, is you could probably end up with a tight end. I mean, I was just like, I want Kelce, who I know I can start every week, and as long as, I'm going to knock on when I say this, as long as Mahomes is healthy, he's going to put up numbers every single week. I mean, I drafted him in both leagues in the second round.
Well, there you go.
So we employed the exact opposite strategies here.
I mean, that's what makes it fun. If we were all recording using the exact same strategy, it would be no fun.
I'm shocked. I also just looking at these quarterbacks and I'm like, I hear your argument about quarterbacks, but you could get Drew Brees in round 12.
I don't know that Drew Brees is that good a fantasy quarterback at this point.
Where did he finish on a per game basis last year? People are underrating. Like, how is Michael Thomas?
I had Drew Brees in some leagues. They don't throw that much anymore, is the thing.
How are Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara first round draft picks, but Drew Brees is not a viable fantasy quarterback?
Well, I mean, I think part of the reason that Michael Thomas is so valuable is, you know, he's getting a large target share.
Let me pull this up here. These numbers look a lot better than the you're just wrong about this. This is week 10 on. I'm looking at this right. Week 10 on. So his first game back, his first game back. Let's do since he came back from injury. 24, that's basically a 25, 11, 21, 22, 11, 40, 28, 22, 22. What about this don't you like?
Yeah, I guess it was better than I remembered. He finished seventh among quarterbacks on a per game basis. Although, of course, the Rams game where he had a minus 0.5 before leaving due to injury weighs into that one.
Like, am I taking crazy pills here? I didn't end up with Drew Brees in either league, but like, there just feels to be some overthinking. Who, you said he finished seventh on a per game basis?
Yes.
Can you read me the six ahead of him?
Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes.
Wow, Matt Stafford. So Mahomes wasn't actually that great in fantasy last year.
You know, he may also have had, like, I think that includes week 17. He probably only played half the game, and then he left the Denver game early with injury, but no. And then he wasn't really super great after the injury. He didn't really get back into form, I think, until the last couple weeks of the regular season.
Okay. Well, what did he finish with today? A 20. It's a good game. They almost win their games too easily sometimes. He only had threw for 211 yards today. He had 75% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, and it's just like not a monster fantasy game, even though he had basically a perfect game as a quarterback.
Yeah, no, what are you going to do?
Well, we will be facing off against each other. We should pick this up in like week 8 or so, just to check in on where things stand. Or when do we play each other?
I think it's usually around week 7, week 6 or week 7.
Usually? There's no usually. This is all brand new.
Oh, in the Peltoncast Champions League?
Yeah.
I guess that's the one we're talking about, isn't it? This is also the one that is available to the public. You can watch our results. We don't play each other until week 9.
All right, week 9. Here we go. I look forward to us having a showdown in week 9. That's after you get bad at fantasy.
But not this year.
This year, it's going to be reversed because the NBA playoffs are going to end and then you're going to get good at fantasy.
It's very possible. We'll see.
I don't know. Right when Dallas Goedert clicks into place.
Exactly. You're saying that I'm waiting for Goedert?
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.